Sask Ag Today with Doug Faulkner.
Good afternoon and welcome to Sask Ag Today. Coming up on today's program, it's been a good week for canola and wheat futures. We'll hear from Adam Piccolo with PI Financial in Winnipeg. Today is International Women's Day, and to celebrate the occasion, we're highlighting some women within the agriculture industry here in Saskatchewan. One of them will be Sarah Shimko, who is originally from Jasmine, Saskatchewan. The other is Sarah Legui, who farms in the Fillmore, Saskatchewan area. All of those stories and much more coming up on today's edition of Sask Ag Today. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Milligan Bio. Milligan Bio now offers BioMeal for your livestock, giving your animals more protein, more energy, and more of what they need. It's also brought to you by Sean Prahitka, your REMAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist. Welcome back to Sask Ag Today. It's been a good week for canola and wheat futures. Adam Piccolo with PI Financial says the May canola and Minneapolis wheat contracts were both up on the week.
We actually saw a bit of an increase here recently, which is a nice reprieve from what I've been normally saying each week here. We've seen an increase of approximately $3 a ton on the week. So now we're a little bit above that $600 a ton level in the May contract, sitting at approximately $602. And we did reach a high of about $610, but that's going to be an area of the $600 level to watch to make sure that canola can kind of go above. We have seen kind of recently a bit of short covering on the soybean side of things, and actually Malaysian palm oil is hitting some kind of recent highs here. So that's been supportive for the canola market overall. And I often see for canola, telling clients this week here, a bit of a low that happens in March for the contract, mainly because a lot of funds don't want to be heavily short going into the springtime, given weather could happen. So that's where we might see canola starting to put in a low here. However, having said that, though, if we do see canola get up to the higher end of the range that I'm looking at, around that 630 to 640 area, I will be looking to hedge some new crop for suitable clients, just given kind of what I'm kind of seeing for the outlook given for the rest of the year.
As for Minneapolis wheat,
on the wheat front as well, a strong wheat week for wheat, up 15 cents a bushel on the May contract right now. We have seen some strong trading volume kind of recently. The current situation of high U.S. prices kind of in relation to the rest of the world has not been resolved and really kind of remains a major factor for potentially kind of still more on the short side of the markets. And now there actually has been worries about Chinese canceling purchases of wheat as well too. So we haven't seen, again, the wheat market have much momentum here. The May Chicago contract is putting in new lows. Again, the Minneapolis side isn't, but they do tend to start to trade together at some point. And so that's where I have been looking at new crop hedging strategies on the wheat side as well.
Piccolo then provides his outlook for next week and beyond.
Well, next week, I'm going to be looking at how the USDA report will kind of affect kind of the coming weeks here, as well as to how the U.S. and Canadian dollar are trading here and oil. We talked about that a little bit. The Canadian dollar has spiked up to kind of above the 74 cent area with the U.S. dollar moving down, kind of oil moving up. The stock market side of things, we are seeing some new 52-week highs for the Toronto Stock Exchange or TSX. So it seems that there could just be buying kind of coming in on some assets like that. But if we do see the currencies on the U.S. dollar go down, that might be supportive or at least a good sign for grains maybe going a bit higher.
Adam Piccolo is a commodity futures advisor with PI Financial in Winnipeg. It's time now for the Ag Review portion of our program, and that's a presentation of New Era Ag Technologies in Swan River.
GX94, Ag Review.
The federal government has pledged up to $1.7 million toward foreign animal disease prevention. The cash goes to Animal Health Canada, a public-private conglomerate that includes the National Farm Animal Care Council, Canadian Animal Health Surveillance System, and Emergency Management. Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada contributed nearly $1 million through its African Swine Fever Industry Preparedness Program to Animal Health Canada's ongoing coordination role in efforts to prevent and prepare for an outbreak of African swine fever. The Canadian Food Inspection Agency contributed nearly $700,000 to support efforts over the next 2 years to prepare for outbreaks of ASF and foot and mouth disease. This will include analysis of surveillance data, training, development of a vaccine strategy in the event of a foot and mouth disease outbreak, and other planning. The British Columbia government says veterinary clinics that help farmers and ranchers care for their animals can apply for help in hiring an extra set of hands this summer. A statement from the Agriculture Ministry says a new $300,000 pilot program will help clinics cover the costs of summer placements for students in veterinary and veterinary technologist programs. Veterinary clinics can apply for up to $6,000 in funding per placement student to help with wages and travel costs up to a total of 50 students this year. BC Agriculture Minister Pam Alexis says introducing veterinary students to rural practices and communities will help them realize it can be a rewarding career and lifestyle. In a State of the Union speech last night amounting to the opening of the 2024 presidential election campaign, which analysts described as forceful and feisty, U.S. President Joe Biden addressed several issues of interest to the agriculture and food industries. The president's speech included a long list of legislation, and while he gave a nod to family farmers and Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, Biden did not call on Congress to pass a farm bill this year. At least one farm group noted that omission and cited some of the challenges facing producers. Highlighting the war in Gaza, Biden said the United States will build a pier on the Gaza coast to receive humanitarian aid, including food, and called on Congress to pass a bill to stop shrinkflation in food packages. European Union lawmakers have granted Ukrainian food producers tariff-free access to EU markets for another year, rejecting amendments that could have increased restrictions. The European Commission has proposed that the suspension of duties and quotas should continue until June 2025, which the European Parliament's Trade Committee approved by 26-4 to 2 against, with one abstention. In response to EU farmer protests, the proposal also introduces an emergency break for poultry, eggs, and sugar, meaning tariffs would be allowed if imports exceed the average levels of 2022 and 2023. It's designed to assuage the likes of Polish farmers and truckers who have blocked Ukrainian border crossing since November and say they have faced unfair competition from cheaper Ukrainian imports. Kyiv has repeatedly said Ukraine has stopped exporting sensitive agricultural goods to Poland and that about 95% of its agricultural exports go via the Black Sea. Czech farmers dumped manure in front of the government's office, blocked Prague streets with tractors, and taunted the country's farm minister yesterday as they renewed protests demanding more help and a halt to cheap imports to the European Union. Farmers across the EU have taken to the streets this year, calling for the removal of restrictions placed on them by a Green Deal plan to tackle climate change and for customs duties on farm products from Ukraine to be reimposed. Czech farmers, in their third protest since mid-February, rolled into Prague early on Thursday in hundreds of tractors, lining streets and a river road leading to the government offices, bringing traffic to a standstill in several spots. Police said farmers dumped manure in front of government headquarters, leading to one arrest. And SaskAg Today is always available on podcast. Listen to past shows whenever you want. Find them easily by going to gx94radio.com. Also, you can hear the podcast on your Amazon Echo. Just enable the GX94 skill and choose SaskAg Today. And yes, it's free. And that's the Ag Review portion of our program. It's time now to head back out once again to Danny Ismond. Welcome back to SaskAg Today. I'm Doug Falconer. It's sunny and minus 12 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at 1 o'clock. Today is International Women's Day, and to celebrate the occasion, we're highlighting women within the agriculture industry here in Saskatchewan. Sarah Shimko is the Executive Director of Ag in the Classroom Saskatchewan and shared her journey to where she is now, from the family farm near Jasmine, Saskatchewan, to traveling abroad.
Well, I grew up on a farm, so it was kind of a traditional upbringing where there's not too many farms like the one I grew up on anymore. We had, you know, a lot of, I think, pigs and ducks and geese and chickens and a big garden and a grain farm and cattle. So I grew up very immersed in agriculture, and I really, I loved being outdoors. I loved the farm, and I was also really interested in kind of the business or the economic side of things. And so I landed in university at the U of S studying in agriculture economics.
She explains how she got involved with agriculture in the classroom.
I wouldn't say it was a very linear journey. I did some traveling. I spent a year in Australia backpacking around. I also spent 2 years in Uganda, East Africa, working with the Canadian Cooperative Association, the Uganda Cooperative Alliance. And so during my time there, that was pretty transformational. And that's where I really started to fall in love with education and youth through some of the work that I was doing there. And, you know, I came back and wasn't really ready to move to the city. And I actually worked on a First Nations reserve with high-risk youth for a couple of years and then sort of found my way into this position, which managed to blend my love of students and education and agriculture all in one.
Shimko talks about some of the challenges she's dealt with over the years.
Well, I think barriers and challenges are sometimes, a matter of your perspective. And I think I probably did encounter challenges. I chose to look at them more as opportunities. One thing I will say, though, is having lived in a developing country for a couple of years, we are certainly lucky as women in this country. And while I know that there's barriers that we need to face and there aren't as many women in top leadership positions, for example, in Canada, the situation is much, much different in other countries. And we've come a long way. And I think it's really important that we remember and do what we can to support women who don't have those same opportunities for different reasons. And you know, there's still a long road to go for many, many women. And that was a really eye-opening experience for me. I think growing up in Canada, sort of feel like, oh, it's pretty equal. And that's not necessarily the truth.
She hopes that the work she does will inspire other females.
Yeah, I hope so. And when I think about successful women, I mean, there are so many different factors that make a woman successful, and it's not necessarily just the career they've chosen or whether or not they've chosen to have kids or not have kids. Success can look really different, and women are pretty bad for comparing themselves to others, and it's really not a comparison game. And I think for all the young women who are striving for things, just go for it and don't compare yourself to other people, because everybody's journey looks different and everybody's journey has the opportunity to be amazing, but it's all a very individual journey.
And Shimko has these final comments.
Thank you very much for taking the time to chat with me. We really appreciate it. Anytime I get to talk about the wonderful work that Ag in the Classroom does, I really appreciate it. And knowing that the career opportunities in agriculture will definitely need women to be filling some of those shoes. Hopefully any young women out there are inspired to consider also a career in agriculture.
At one point, Shimko was also the executive director of Ag in the Classroom Canada on an interim basis. It's time now for the livestock market conditions, and they're a presentation of Heartland Livestock in Verdun.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for April are trading at 187.32 this afternoon. That's down 140. June live cattle trading at 183.17, down 142. April feeder cattle trading at 254.20, down 210. May feeder cattle trading at 256.90, down 155. April lean hogs trading at 84.50, down 2. May lean hogs trading at 91.62, up 40. And that's the livestock market conditions. Well, as you heard, women take on important roles within the agriculture industry, and Sarah Legui is no different. Sarah farms alongside Jake Legui in the Fillmore, Saskatchewan area. She's also a counselor in the RM of Wellington.
Yeah, well, I grew up on a farm. We had cattle and grain growing up, and I always knew I was going to be in agriculture. I didn't really see myself as just like a strictly grain farmer until I was actually quite a bit older and we sold the cattle, because that was always kind of my favorite place to be, I guess. But I've been full-time farming for 12 years now, and I've had my 1A for, I guess, about the same amount of time, actually longer than that, 14 years, I guess I've had it. And it was just a supernatural fit, I guess. So it was nice to always know that whatever capacity, it was going to be agriculture at some point.
She talks about why she loves being on the farm.
It's just different every day. You never really know what you're going to be doing, which some days is a little bit stressful, but it's always exciting, and get to work with my family every day, and there's always new challenges, and get to be outside, which most days is pretty good. sometimes I miss my inside job at John Deere, but it's been really good, even with the challenges that seem to be always facing. But I like running equipment and just learning new things all the time.
Legui says being in agriculture hasn't always been easy.
Yeah, there's always challenges, I guess, whether they're internal or external, between weather and markets and all the prices and inflation right now and poor crop prices. And there's always seems to be something. And now all the government and red tape and policy issues that we've been having, and seems like we're always fighting to see another day. And yeah, it's not for the faint of heart, I guess.
But she says it's good to hear that more and more women are involved in agriculture.
I don't really, like, the numbers to me are kind of moot, because I know that there's been so many women for so long that have worked on the farm. Like, my grandma used to drive grain truck. My mom drove the semi. She drove the combine. Like, we just grew up as that was normal. And my dad, like, when we were kids, it wasn't my brother's going out to the field and I'm staying in and making supper because I'm a girl and he's a boy. And like, my sister and I were still learned how to run equipment and did all that stuff. So I think now maybe it's just more women are actually claiming that position. I think that have all done it a long time. They just never thought of themselves as an actual farmer, which I always thought was kind of weird. Like, you know, when my mom was, when we were little kids and stuff, she would still probably say, I'm a farm wife, even though she's a farmer. She's running equipment. She's taking the semi into town. Like, she's doing all this stuff. So I think it's really cool to see all the different farms that all these women are, like, taking charge and doing all these jobs. And half the time, they have a cab full of kids, and they're still running all this equipment, which I think is extremely admirable. And I know a lot of people balk at social media, but I've met a lot of like-minded women through social media that I probably might not have before that are out there doing all the same work, and I think it's really awesome.
She advises women to go for whatever their passion is and don't underestimate your worth. Please stay tuned. SaskAg Today will return in 1 minute's time. Welcome back to SaskAg Today. I'm Doug Faulkner. There was Saskatchewan representation at the Canadian Federation of Agriculture annual general meeting in Ottawa held last week. The Agricultural Producers Association of Saskatchewan, or APAS, was there, including President Ian Boxall. He says it was a good experience and a chance to raise awareness of the issues impacting Saskatchewan farmers. The APAS delegates also had a meeting with Federal Ag Minister Lawrence McCauley on topics including Bill C-234.
So we had a great dialogue on 234, and we've agreed to disagree on the carbon tax, right, with the Liberal government. I think that's safe to say, but, you know, when it comes to 234 and you know, they like to call it carve-outs. I don't like to use that word because my opinion in an industry like agriculture where we cannot pass the cost along, it's not necessarily a carve-out. It's, you know, it's just what needs to happen to make us competitive. And, you know, I think we were hoping to see it, the bill pass in its entirety with the heating and cooling of barns in there, but the Senate has put those amendments in. So I think we're just going to have to wait and see what happens with the politics of the bill now as it moves back through the House and see what happens, whether the House approves it with the amendments or whether they approve it without the amendments, and we'll have to see what happens. So our grumblings are our hearings. What we hear now is that maybe the Bloc is looking at supporting it the way it is amended, and I think some of the other parties are looking at not approving the amendments, which then it would bring the bill back in its entirety with the heating and cooling of barns. So we'll have to see how that plays out. There's some politics going on there, right? Politics within the politics, right? So it's interesting to watch that play out. And, you know, we took a number of issues from Saskatchewan there. To talk about, Saskatchewan producers pay $36 million in carbon tax just on rail freight, but yet the railroads pass that cost along to us, right? And we pay the bill. So that, you know, that works out to a buck an acre for Saskatchewan producers. And if the carbon tax truly was designed to be a mechanism to change behavior, since the railroads don't have to pay it, because we do, they don't have to change anything. You know, so our recommendation was charge them the carbon tax, put it in a separate fund where the railroads could access that to improve their carbon footprint. So, you know, that gain, I think, was a lot of traction on that topic when we're in Ottawa, for sure. And I think that's an easy one because we don't dictate what the railroads do. So why are we paying the bill?
He notes the need for a review of the Canada Grain Act was brought up as well.
Yeah, you bet. We chatted about that and ways that, you know, we see that maybe there's a few things we can do outside of the act, because of course the act, to change the act, it requires legislation. But maybe there's some things we could do to modernize the Grain Commission to make it work better for producers. So we had conversations with all of the critics on that and the Ag Minister, and also with the Deputy Ag Minister, with the staffers there, to make sure that they understand that there are some things that could happen outside of the Act, changing the Act, that could modernize the Grain Commission to make sure that their mandate of protecting producers is still at the forefront of what they do.
Boxall also wants Ottawa to address the issue of the Canadian Grain Commission's outbound grain inspections.
Yeah, I think there's some differing opinions on what should happen with the outward inspection. And I think APAS's stance has always been that we agree that the CGC should be the ones doing the outward inspection to ensure that the quality of the product being shipped is good. Now, in saying that, looking at some of the costs that are billed through the outward inspection, there are some reports that show third party can do it cheaper. So maybe there needs to be some looking at how the Grain Commission is funded, because currently they get a lot of funding through the outward inspection, and maybe that isn't totally a fair model, and maybe that needs to be looked at to address some of the costs and how the CGC is funded. So that all comes back to the review, and that all comes back to modernizing the CGC, and these are all conversations. I think at the end of the day, every group involved just wants to ensure that the product that's being shipped is what's standard for Canada, which is, you know, some of the best.
That's APAS President Ian Boxall.
Commodities Update.
Canola futures are trading up across the board this afternoon. May canola trading at $6.07.20, up $1.80. July canola trading at $6.14.90, up $1.60. May Minneapolis wheat trading at $6.62.75. That's up 8 cents. May Kansas City wheat trading at 586.5, up 11.75 of a cent. May Chicago wheat trading at 542.25, up 13.75 of a cent. May corn trading at 438 and three quarters, up 0.75 cents. May soybeans trading at 1173 and a quarter, up 7 cents. May oats trading at 364 and a half, up 0.75 cents. And that's the commodities update. It's time now to check in once again with Danny Ismond. Welcome back to SaskAg Today. An update now on the terrible wildfires burning in the Texas panhandle near the border with Oklahoma. It's believed a downed power line was the cause of the largest blaze, known as the Smokehouse Creek Fire. Several days ago, the Smokehouse Creek Fire quadrupled in size in less than 48 hours, catching officials, civilians, and farmers off guard and unable to prevent widespread damage. Several large ranchers cut down their own fences so cattle had a chance to run away from the approaching flames and smoke. Sid Miller is the Texas State Agriculture Commissioner. He provided this update on cattle deaths earlier this week to Fox News.
It's almost at 2,000 square miles, a million and a half acres. Preliminary reports, 3,000 head of cattle, that number will triple or quadruple before it's over, especially when we start euthanizing the cattle that have had their hooves burnt or their udders burnt. We're going to have to, you know, put a lot of these animals down. It's a sad situation.
Several nearby ranches have loaned out tractors and other heavy equipment needed to pile up and transport the corpses of cattle before they're buried or incinerated. As for other infrastructure damage,
we've had over 500 houses and barns destroyed, and that number continues to climb. We've had two fatalities. Thank goodness it's only two. But we also have five firefighters that have been injured. We've got over 120 miles of power lines that are down. Now, this country's sparsely populated and very arid, so there's not a lot of stock water. Most of the water comes from wells. So not only is this livestock out of grass, but there's also no water. So it's a very desperate situation. We have seven grain and seed dealers that have completely been wiped out. The good news is there's a lot of dairies and feedlots in that area. Those, for the most part, are unscathed.
The big challenge will be trying to restore the burned grassland. Dr. Rick Avery is the director of the Texas A&M Extension Service. He spoke at a news conference Tuesday afternoon in Amarillo, Texas.
This fire event will affect the ag economy for the region for a long time to come. And so the Extension Service, one of our roles that we'll be playing is education moving forward. I know we'll have a lot of questions from agricultural producers about when and where and how to bring along rangeland that's been damaged in this event. And that will be, we're already starting to push out some of that information and we'll continue to do so in the future.
As for the wildfires, the situation has improved, but 350 firefighters plus local volunteers continue to man the very lengthy boundaries of the Smokehouse Creek Fire. Nim Kidd is the chief of the Texas Division of Emergency Management.
The Smokehouse Creek Fire has a perimeter of a little over 550 miles. The men and women that are out there right now are doing everything they can to put a perimeter around that. So as we see up to three different wind shifts just in today's weather, an additional fire weather coming in Thursday and Friday, we do not want any escaped embers getting out of that and starting a new fire. We've got a tremendous amount of resources here in the Panhandle. We'll jump on any new fire that starts. But over 90% of wildfires are human caused. Do everything we can not to start any more fires in this area of the country right now.
The Texas Agriculture Commissioner, Sid Miller, says some ranchers will have to sell their land with no cattle or infrastructure. He adds it will take a couple of years to get things back in shape.
Farm Bulletin Board.
The Canadian Association of Farm Advisors has a parkland learning event coming up on Wednesday, March 20th. It'll run from 9 until 10:30 in the morning at the Community Futures Ventures office at 204 Smith Street East in Yorkton. However, you must RSVP by March 18th to Denise at philipchuckmanagement.com. There will be a panel discussion on farm financial planning. Monty Taphorn and Denise Philipchuk will be the speakers. Monty Taphorn has been working with TD Bank since 1999 in various roles within agriculture services. He's the relationship manager with TD Yorkton Agriculture Services. His current position as a relationship manager in the area focuses on helping farm and agribusiness customers and prospects reach their financial goals. Using a suite of specialized financial products and services, he can tailor competitive lending solutions to match the requirements of a farm and agribusiness. Meanwhile, Denise Philipchuk is the CEO of Philipchuk Management Incorporated, and she developed a keen interest for agriculture on the family farm in the Swan River Valley of Western Manitoba, growing into a passion for providing farmers and farm families with valuable and unbiased advice and information they need to confidently make decisions with peace of mind. So that's coming up Wednesday, March 20th here in Yorkton. And that's all the time we have for today's Farm Bulletin Board. It's now 1 o'clock, time to check the GX94 precision weather forecast. For the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, and Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions today, mainly sunny, winds south-southwest at 10 and a high of minus 7. For tonight, clear, winds south at 10 to 20, a low of minus 17. For tomorrow, mainly sunny, winds south-southeast at 15 to 25, a high of minus 1, an overnight low of minus 7. For Sunday, sunny, winds southwest at 15 to 25, a high of plus 3. For Monday, partly sunny, also a high of plus 3. And Tuesday, partly sunny with a 30% chance of flurries and a high of plus 1. In the Paw and Dauphin, it's minus 9 degrees. Swan River and Shoal Lake Russell, minus 11. Brandon and Roblin, minus 14. Regina and Saskatoon are at minus 14. Hudson Bay, minus 7. Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, minus 11. Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, minus 9. The Yorkton, Melville region has a sunny sky, a south wind at 9 kilometers an hour. 70% is the relative humidity. The temperature is minus 12 degrees. With the wind chill, it feels more like minus 17 degrees. That's your agriculture weather, and that'll do it for SaskAg Today for today. Be sure to tune in again on Monday at 12:15 Saskatchewan time for another edition of the program. It's time now for the news and sports headlines.